Hello there, Creator Pod listeners. We are back with Season 3, Episode 16, and we have a treat for you tonight. One of my college buddies, we have known each other since we were, I guess, about 18 years old and sang a cappella together. This is the one and only Steve Walvick. Do you prefer Steve or Steven?
Oh, either one. They're both are good.
I call him Steve, but on his profiles, it says Steven everywhere.
Can I start with a question for you, actually?
Sure.
So are you still a vegetarian?
I never was a vegetarian.
I married a vegetarian. I do remember in college when you would sing that all you would consume was some tempeh and some tofu. I don't eat meat, if you don't remember the rap from
I do remember that.
Out
yes.
of the blue. That was classic.
Yeah. So Darrell, in between our snappy a cappella songs, we would do these little skits. We called them intros, and they would sort of, fill in between the Cole Porter songs and everything else that we were singing. And I have to point out that Steve and I sang a cappella like in the pre-Pitch Perfect era, right?
Oh yeah.
It was a lot less cool when we did it. and I would say of the co-ed groups at Yale, we were in a co-ed group. Yale's a big a cappella scene, about 15 groups at the time we were there. And of the co-ed groups, we were like the most uncool of all of those. So it was an uncool medium in which we were the uncoolest.
That is definitely true.
The group is called Out of the Blue. And actually in recent years, when I have gone back, I have come to find out that they are like the hottest group on campus now. So, and to see these guys sing, I could never get into the group now.
Neither of us. No. I'm a professional singer and I'd still.
Steve, you are a basso profundo, if people have not picked that up yet. Could you go ahead and grace us with your lowest notes?
Ba 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 ba.
Pretty good.
I could do more below that, but then it might break your speakers. So I don't know how much you paid for those, if you're those insured or not.
And if you're listening to the podcast on 1.5 speed, I encourage you to just go back and listen to it at 1 speed, so you're getting the true range. I am a baritone. Steve is a true bass, and I would sometimes try to compete with him for solos. I think we both went out for that bass line on Blue Moon, right? That was like
ba 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 dang a dang dang a ding a dong ding blue moon blue moon.
What have I stumbled into?
So you mentioned that you are a professional singer, and the particular flavor of professional singer that you are is that you are a cantor.
That is correct.
And
those who can't canter something.
Well, you are something of a crossover guest here. When we started this podcast, I always had in mind that I wanted to talk to people of various faith backgrounds, but we have tended to be stuck in our own Salvation Army faith background for most of our guests. But a cantor is a role in the Jewish faith. So tell us a little bit about, what it is that you do and what it means that you're a cantor.
Well, first of all, keep in mind, cantor is not specifically Jewish.
Okay.
Johann Sebastian Bach was the cantor at the Church of Leipzig. It just means someone who chants, someone who cants.
Okay.
In 40 years ago, if you were a Jewish cantor, that normally would have meant you led the services, maybe a Friday night, a Saturday morning. You might do a bar mitzvah lesson that is preparing the 12 and 13-year-olds for their coming of age ceremony. But you really weren't involved in the congregation outside of this sort of heavy musical aspect of the job, of the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I guess now 30 years, the role has sort of morphed. It depends. Every congregation is different. But at least for me, music is not really the end. Music is the tool I use for all sorts of education, life cycle events, ways of connecting with God and inspiring my congregation. But it's not so much the performance of the music. I'm not there to perform, but I'm there to encourage my congregation to what we call daven, what you might call pray or sing, to join together. So that is the musical aspect of my job.
And you went to school for this. You studied cantoria.
I did. So the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York is sort of the conservative branch. There are three main branches of Judaism. You have your Orthodox, which are the ones who are very much closer to fundamental Judaism, if you will. You have the Reform on the left end, who are very much looking to incorporate their Judaism into a modern life. But the focus is more on being where society is rather than what the Bible says. So you can sort of, you put the Bible into where life is today. And conservative movement is sort of in the middle, where we try to walk that balancing act of keeping true to our traditions while also having a foot in the modern world that we all exist in.
Well, the Salvation Army has a large presence in Rockland County, New York. And so so a lot of our listeners will be familiar with the folks in Muncie and mm-hmm. that Orthodox community there.
Yes.
I have to say, when I went to college, I had not really had a lot of exposure to people of the Jewish faith. And that was one of the fascinating elements of it to me, was that it seemed like there were numerous different ways of being Jewish, right? And in my ignorance, I didn't equate it to even the different denominations of Christianity. In some ways, it has some, some parallels, some similarities there, that it's a different practice of the same religion.
Exactly. But even in Protestantism, you have the difference between Methodists and Episcopalians.
Right.
And Southern Baptists versus normal Baptists.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about the Southern Baptists tonight. We're not bringing them up tonight. But one of the things that stuck out to me, Darrell, we used to go on these tours, and I was very at home on the tours because we rented a 15-passenger van, and I had grown up driving around in those, Salvation Army vans. But we were on our way on one of our early tours. And Steve is not a small guy. Are you 6'2"?
6'1", somewhere around there.
Okay, but you're a solid
6'2" on my Tinder.
Yes.
6'2" on my Tinder.
but here we are traveling down the highway, and I was aware that Steve was committed to his faith. But the real moment that got me was when you stood up, all of your 6'1" frame. Inside this 15-passenger van with a bunch of other people, most of whom were heathens, let's be honest, and you did your prayers. You sang your prayers in the middle of that van, and that just spoke to me in terms of, wow, this is a person who is really dedicated to his faith, that he's not going to put it to the side and say, well, I'll just do it when we stop at a rest stop or whatever. There was a time of the day when you were supposed to say your prayers, and you were doing that. And that really... was an incredible testimony to me about how deeply ingrained your faith was. So how was it that faith, was so central to your upbringing and stuff like that? Can you talk about your faith from an early age?
So my faith came from my family, my parents. We were always committed to our congregation. And really, I must admit, growing up, my concept of God was not really fully developed. It's still not fully developed. The God that I believe in today is not the God I believed in as a child. And it's certainly not even the God I believed in when I was in college or beyond. When you ask many, many kids what they believe in God, it pretty much comes down to Santa Claus. I do good. Good things happen to me. I do bad, and bad things happen to me. And as I've gone through my life, I've developed and enriched my understanding of God. and I've developed my own personal theology that's actually continuing to develop even this day. I can talk about that a little bit later. But
yes, we're going to get into that.
For me, Judaism was all about family relationships.
Okay.
It was the holidays. It was spending time with my grandparents and my aunts and uncles and my father and my mother. And it was a way of expressing that love through a focus, which we'll call God for now. Because again, you know, it wasn't really fully developed at the time.
Right. Got it. So being a cantor, is that a volunteer position? Is that your actual full-time employment? What's the story there?
So there are part-time and volunteer positions. In Hebrew, we call it a chazan.
Very nice. Get guttural on us.
In many synagogues, the cantor chazan is a full-time job.
Okay.
I do many of the same things that a rabbi would, and that is do life cycle events. I teach in the school, do adult education. I run programming. I'm cooking. You know, I'm cleaning. I'm setting up the tables. You know, all sorts of crazy things. In fact, though. I am now pursuing a rabbinical career at the same time, which is quite a handful. Even though, again, the job can be, I can do the same thing with just a cantorial investiture. I'm gaining extra knowledge through my rabbinical education as well.
Yeah, and I definitely want to delve into that. A little bit later. And so all of this is at the Congregation B'nai Israel in Toms River, New Jersey. Is that right?
That was my former
congregation. Got
currently,
it.
I'm at the East Northport Jewish Center here in lovely East Northport, Long Island.
Got it. And originally from Livingston, New Jersey, right?
Yes, Livingston, New Jersey.
Yeah. So Darrell is from Newark. So you guys have the Jersey thing in common.
Yes.
Yeah, I've shopped at your mall fairly regularly. Good old Livingston Mall. It's not the best.
No.
And I think Darrell supports the other team in pinstripes. I don't know if Darrell, you can make out that that's a Mets jersey that Steven is sporting there.
I assumed it was a Mets jersey when he called me Darryl.
Yeah, I mean, you really have long suffering down, Stephen. I mean, you know,
that is sort of the Jewish tradition, if you will. You know,
that's what I'm saying. It's like not bad enough that you're Jewish; you're also a Mets fan.
Jerusalem being destroyed, the Mets.
Yeah, put much, that on a T-shirt.
That's a 2,500 year. Those are the two worst parts of history right there.
Well, and as you described your responsibilities, and I saw, you know, Darrell's eyes light up a little bit, because as an ordained minister, a Salvation Army officer, a lot of the things you described are a lot of the things that Darrell sort of does in his, you know, everyday ministry. Right now he's in a particular appointment where he's working with youth in various congregations, but when he's in a local setting, that's a lot of what he's doing. A lot of setting up tables, right?
And cooking.
And cooking, right? So how does preparing a temple service go? We were actually at a B'nai Mitzvah a couple of weeks ago. Sydney's best friend's twin younger siblings were going through their bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah together. And I was struck by the cantor's role there. So how do you prepare for a temple service?
Okay, so in Judaism, there are three daily services: your morning, your afternoon, your evening. Shacharit, Mincha, and Arvit. The afternoon and evening services are normally fairly perfunctory, and the morning service is the longer service. And three times a week, we read passages from the Torah, the Bible readings.
Right.
And then on Saturday on Shabbat, it's a longer service. So you went to a longer service on a Saturday morning or a Friday night. And
yep.
For Shabbat, the service is the central part of the service is that Bible reading, that Torah reading, which is chanted with cantillations. And the point of the melody of cantillation is not so much to make it sound beautiful, but to punctuate the text. You know, we don't think of punctuation as necessarily melodic, but it really is. There's a very big difference between you have a great shirt on and you have a great shirt on. And depending upon how you inflect the text, you can change the meaning. So the very first three words of the Torah are Bereshit, Bara, Elohim, which, you know, is in the beginning, God created, or created God. And depending upon how you phrase that, you can make a totally different theology. You can say Bereshit, Bara Elohim, Et HaShemayim V'et HaAretz, which is in the beginning, God created heaven and earth. Or, and problematically, you could say Bereshit Bara Elohim, which is in the beginning was created God.
Right.
Which there are lots of people who might follow that theology, but that is not my theology. So the singing of the Bible is very important to make sure that you're expressing the meaning of what you're saying. Outside of the Torah reading, the Bible portion, you have prayers on either end. And in praying in Judaism is slightly different than I've seen in a church, in that there is, you have the private prayers, you have the group singing, but then you have this sort of susurration of group chanting at your own pace, and there's this sort of sound that is not necessarily identifiable, and as we daven together but not necessarily together. And I think it sends a beautiful message that prayer is at once both an individual activity and a communal activity, and that we're not necessarily all in the same boat, but we're all in the same storm. And right. Some of us are in different boats, and we're all sort of trying to get to some destination. But we don't all have to go at the same pace. We don't all, not all of us are as great singers, or not all of us are as great with the reading of the Hebrew or transliterating, or you know, you don't have to have great understanding of Hebrew to have wonderful theological understanding. And so the idea of praying together is that we can recognize that we're all slightly different, but we're all sort of going in the same direction.
I appreciated it, this B'nai Mitzvah, the fact that and I think it's a Reformed temple, but their Torah book and their book of the songs that they sort of went through, it all had, you know, English translation there. And I found it fascinating that as I was reading the English translation and she was canting, we arrived at the ending at about the same time. And I don't know if that's the sign of a good cantor, that she sort of has set it up that way. If she was being particularly, Gentile friendly that day, because she knew not everybody in the room was going to be Jewish, but it was very sort of friendly to an outsider. What could have been a very impenetrable service was really sort of welcoming. And so I was able to, you know, get into that scripture myself, even though I didn't, you know, keep up with all the Hebrew, or very much of the Hebrew at all.
I like to think of my congregation, and really any congregation, as a parallel to a gym, like a fitness center, right? You know, so not everyone, you can't always do the high level spin class, right? And you can't like expect everyone to come in and start bench pressing 500.
Yeah, Darrell, what is your deadlift goal that you're working toward?
500.
There 500. You go.
And where are you at right now?
455.
Wow. that's like a couple people.
It comes in handy when you're preaching.
What are your services like? What are you? Who are you lifting?
Yeah, it's.
I mean, you got to lift people up. I mean, I get it, but I didn't think it was quite that.
It's a very aggressive literal. Service.
No. I have got to come.
No,
to
just kidding.
There are some jokes that I could make that would please some Salvationists and would offend many Salvationists if I made them. So I will refrain.
That is the best kind of joke.
Yeah.
Well, I know that's your that is your sense of humor, Steve, for sure.
If someone in the room is not offended, it's not a good enough joke.
There you go.
So preparing, you know, everybody there in the worship environment, it's kind of like a gym. Not everybody's at the same spot. Sorry, I interrupted you to allow Darrell to brag on his deadlifting.
So the idea is that the problem is often you have to decide when you're making the service who your target audience is. And there are going to be people who are going to want that high level class, you know, and like if you're just going to do, okay, everyone get your little bunny kettlebells and they'll be bored. And you get people who are like, you know, what is this, too much metal? It's just, I don't know what this is big and heavy. And then they're turned away. And so the real skill of your pastor, of your rabbi, of your cantor is to read the room. And yeah, there are certain requirements of prayers that we need to be said, but adjust the service for who are there so that they can have the best religious experience that they can. Just like, you know, when you go to, you're doing the gym and, you know, you see everyone's had a really rough day and they're all like dead. You're not gonna kill them on the elliptical because it's not going to be effective. They're not going to get something out of it.
Right.
So that's.
Well, and you can definitely do the high end because you've already used several 5-syllable words that I don't even understand. So I can see your range that you can go, you know, in that direction. Now, what about the selection of the Torah passages? Is that kind of prescribed throughout the year? Are you working off a calendar? How much leeway or room for creativity is there in that?
So we go by, we read the entire 5 books of Moses within a year.
Okay.
So it cycles through, and each week is an assigned portion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is
and is
where
that on the Hebrew calendar or on the
It's on the Hebrew calendar.
Okay. All right.
So it goes from the holiday of Simchat Torah, which is the celebration of the end of the book. And you go, that's in the fall, it's right after the high holidays of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. And you go through the entire book, and then the next Simchat Torah, you start over again. And then on the holidays, you read special portions related to those holidays, but each Saturday is one section, a prescribed section, and it becomes very difficult homiletically to take the section you're given and connect it with the message you want to give. Because, you know, sometimes it's great. You know, sometimes you're talking about love and what we call the Shema, which is one of our central prayers of how, you know, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, you know, and you shall love God with all your soul and all your body and all your might. And that's great. And then you have other weeks where you're talking about skin disease. And you're like, okay, here we go. And so the beauty of it is that the study of Bible lets you figure out what the lessons are within that don't necessarily appear on the surface level. And there is so much within it. There is so much meaning, so much value, so much understanding that you can take a verse that on one level seems like, you know, and Joshua took a stick and you're like, okay, he has a stick. But then you're like, oh, but he's lifting up Moses and he's supporting him. And that's the real beauty of Bible to my understanding.
Have you ever preached on the withering skin diseases, Darrell? Is that popular sermon topic? I can't remember one when you were in Boston where you preached on the withering skin disease.
Well, that's why I lift the weight. So when they attack me, I can throw them back into the pews.
Though actually, I have to say, sometimes it works out because that always happens around March, right? Mm-hmm. March or April, we would get to that point. And March 2020.
Right.
And we're talking about diseases and quarantines and what it means to be cut off from your community.
Right.
And that was some powerful stuff. That, you know, when I was in cantorial school and someone was telling about this portion, there was no way I could come up with a message from that portion. But sometimes it lines up.
Right.
You're in luck, too. There's a guy with monkeypox apparently on the loose in New York.
There you go.
I just heard about monkeypox today, and I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, you know, it sounds like a movie plot. And of course, that it started in Florida in the United States is very apropos.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I did not have that on my 2022 bingo card, though. I'll tell you that much. That was. I had murder hornets. I was waiting for the murder hornets to come back. But.
I wanted to ask you, do you sing in any groups these days outside of your cantorial duties?
I really wish I did. I really, really wish I did. The problem is between my full-time job and my 9 credit hours at rabbinical school and the 9 plus hours of PT I'm doing every week, I just don't have the time.
And your wife and your beautiful daughter.
Oh, yeah. The home. No, definitely. But seriously. Yeah, exactly.
It looks like she got your curls.
She has my hair.
Yeah.
And she's not giving it back.
There you go.
As you and I are both, though I can grow the beard. I do have the beard sometimes, but that's not as, that is not as righteous as yours. You have.
Well, and mine's kind of in between. It can get pretty bushy. I don't go full ZZ Top. But it was funny actually. So my deal is, I don't know if you remember Dan Snow used to say this, whenever you cut your hair, it should be dramatic. So people should notice. That was one of his life philosophies. And so I've adopted that with the beard. So I shave it down like once a quarter. And it was so funny. I walked into church like the Sunday after I had shaved it down for the quarter. And our new pastor, Shakai, was like crestfallen. He was like, oh, man. He was so disappointed that the big like James Harden beard was gone. Mm. So I think he'll be happy now. He hasn't seen me in a couple of weeks. He was actually away at his commencement for his master's degree at Asbury Theological Seminary this weekend.
Mazel tov.
So that's exactly what I sent him in the text message. being from Sharon, Mass, I felt like mazel tov was the appropriate thing for me to say to him.
It's always
but,
appropriate.
But yeah, he was very disappointed when the beard went really small. So you are studying, at rabbinical school. How long of a process has this been? How long does the process generally take? You know, where are you in that mix?
Starting from zero, it should be about a 5-year program.
Okay.
I'm currently at the Academy for Jewish Religion right now, which unlike JTS, which was a conservative movement-centered school, AJR is sort of post-denomination. So I get to study with Orthodox and Reform and Reconstructionist and Hasidish and like all sorts of like minor branches of Judaism, and not minor that they're not important, right. But they're smaller branches of Judaism.
Got it.
And I'm in a cantors to rabbis program that they've developed where they recognize that cantors already have a certain foundation in many things. So what would be, I think it's 108 credits is about 55.
Okay.
So I am about halfway, maybe a little more. My goal, the real push didn't come from me. The push came from my congregation. I'm working with a rabbi, but he's going to retire in a year, and unfortunately, my congregation is shrinking in size, and they're thinking we can't really afford 2 clergy person. We would love you to stay. We want you to be a rabbi. Again, I could probably do the job just as a chazan with the education that I already have. But, you know, people want a rabbi. And more importantly, this is giving me an opportunity to expand my understanding and my knowledge, and I'm really getting a lot of. I mean, I could have gone to Joe's House of Rabbis, and you know, I could download the certificate for I think $20 from Life Church, Universal Life Church. You can do whatever you want. Yeah. I don't want
to. I did one of those ones so I could perform a wedding. I go to our
yeah exactly
in order to perform a wedding.
Exactly. This is I don't think the creator does the creator podcast support. Online ordination.
Well, I have to say, I was surprised when I got the paperwork that I was also offered an opportunity to buy land on the moon from the same organization that ordained me to do this thing.
It's a one-stop shop.
There's a message there. There's a message there.
My niece is legally married. You know, it counted and everything else. But yeah, that was a pretty out there. There's some pretty out there stuff you can find if you're just looking for a quickie ordination. is it traditional for people to enter rabbinical school at a younger age? Are you like, you know, sort of a second career in rabbinical school compared to most? Like, what's the general? You know,
so in the Cantors to Rabbis program, everyone's obviously a right. second career.
Yep.
In my case, a third career, because you know. But remember, before this, I was a computer scientist back in
right.
in the 90s before I went to cantorial school. In the plain rabbinical program, at least at AJR, there's a fairly wide mix. I have classmates who are in their low 20s, who I keep, you know, they're so young. They're so young. And, you know, I have a classmate who's 82 and wow. he's becoming a rabbi. And, you know, I asked him what he's going to do with it. And he's like, I'm going to be a rabbi. And that's such a beautiful answer.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to. And the beauty, you don't have to go to a congregation. I know my wife is a rabbi. She's a chaplain. So she works at the Conic Medical Center as a chaplain. And, you know, there are army chaplain rabbis. There are Hillel rabbis who work at a university. There are teachers. So, and depending upon what your goal is and where you are in life, it's all over the place. It's all over the place.
Yeah. Well, that's great. How long have you been in East Northport then?
I came here in the summer of 2019, and as I was getting my feet wet, I had all these plans for outreach, and,
right.
you know, having great events, and all that. Everything planned. I had this great event planned for April of 2020, and yeah.
So it's your fault.
It's my fault.
There you go. Now we got that out of the way. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Listen, back to the gym. I've already said that that COVID is my fault because I was going to the gym 5 days a week for the first time in my life, maybe 6 days a week for the first time in my life throughout the months of January and February of 2020. So I take full responsibility. Yeah.
The two of you created a disturbance in the force.
The universe had to put a stop to that.
That's right.
So obviously with Orthodox congregations, there would have been a real issue with going to Zoom, in the time of COVID because of, you know, use of technology and that kind of thing in the conservative for your congregation. How was that? What was.
Well, it's interesting because that's not exactly true.
Okay.
In fact, there are conversations in ancient Talmudic sources that were being used to support Zoom services.
Okay.
That is, there are discussions about what do you do if you're trying to have a prayer service and someone's up in a balcony mm-hmm. and like they're through a window, can you count them as part of the congregation? And that is sort of the logic that's being applied to Zoom, because you know we can see you, we
right.
can hear you. We're not in the same room, but we're still you can
but,
still.
But
be
what about the use of electronics? Would that not violate?
It's a problem on the Sabbath.
Yeah,
but remember that's okay. The Sabbath is only one of
okay
7 days a week. So even in Orthodox communities, there have been many that have done Zoom services for the rest of the week.
Okay.
Now, sure. On the Sabbath, there's a little more, it gets a little tricky. For us as conservative Jews, we have gone by the principle of setting things up beforehand. Just like you can leave a light on over the Sabbath, we leave the Zoom going.
Got it.
And if you don't touch the computer, and you can set it up so like Zoom is, you don't know, it automatically goes. And that was acceptable to our understanding within the conservative movement.
Because I remember that life got complicated for you and some other people when we went to the digital access cards for our entryways to the dorms.
Yes, indeed.
That you'd have to wait outside for somebody to come along who was going to open the door anyway. And that was not an issue with a physical key, but it was when we went to an electronic system with the doors.
But I'll tell you a secret. There were still physical keys that you could get to sneak in. Yes, I'm not sure if that's still the case. I think it's
well.
Still
the case was that before. was that a workaround that was offered to Jewish students, or was it just something that you sort of discovered on the sly?
No. It was official. And I think there are still some Orthodox students who. I'm not sure every residential college allows that, but I think there's like one or two.
So they accommodate it.
So it's not like all the, you have to go to like the side gate and, you know, you have to say the secret password or whatever it is to get in. But there are ways
to
work around.
I almost put a pepperoni slice in Eric's kosher toaster oven freshman year. and it was my other white bread Protestant roommate who had to dive across the room and be like, "No, it's kosher." So yeah, life lesson that day. It was pretty wild. Darrell, do you have any questions for Steve before we go to the polls?
Oh, absolutely. So you mentioned earlier that the God you worship now is different than the one you did when you were a child. And I'm curious, what would you say is the biggest difference in your understanding from your younger years to how you understand God now?
Okay, well, I don't want to be saying I'm not praying to a different God. And God
right.
is no God.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But my perspective has broadened.
Right.
I read and watch a lot of science fiction. And it begs the question, if God is only as powerful as described in the Bible, God outside of Genesis, outside of the creation story, I can get you an alien. I can picture an alien could do all the miracles described and but is that God? You know, if some space alien came down from the sky and said, "I parted the waters with my ray gun," and you know, and I brought Lazarus back to life with the CPR things, and you know, that is not enough. And so you have to think about what defines God, and how can God, you know, you have God the creator and God who, the personal God who has a relationship with you and me. And dealing with that dichotomy is always a struggle. Because, you know, how can the God that created quasars and galaxies and superclusters of galaxies, millions and millions of potential life forms out there, how can that God have any awareness, let alone care, let alone love for you or me? You know, like, well, what does the scientist care about the individual virus that it's studying to create a cure? And so on some level, I understand that God's love for me is bigger than my understanding of, and my possible understanding of what love is. But I do believe that God loves me, and I do believe that God loves us all. But I also don't believe that my understanding of God and my understanding of religion is true lowercase t. That is, I don't believe that Judaism is the one true faith. Just like I don't believe that, I believe that each one of us, each of us puny humans, each of our puny human religions are one facet of this giant, infinite gem that is God, and that is that God wants to connect with us. And I see God through my little Jewish facet, and you see it through the Salvation Army facet and the Muslims, and the fact that we fight about what God is. No, it says in my book that God did it. No. That's nonsense. That's nonsense. That's a complete waste of time. God is like, if God is rolling God's eyes at every time we fight and argue and claim to know that the one true will of God. But what we can say is, if we look at all of our perspectives together, maybe we have a better understanding. And that's why, you know, I love what you're doing here, because by learning from me and learning from non-Christians, you will strengthen your own Christian understanding of God. And seeing these different perspectives makes your own relationship and your own religion that much stronger. So yeah, I don't believe that Judaism is the one true religion for everybody, but I do believe that it is the one true religion for me. It is my pathway to God.
One of my favorite definitions or identifiers of God in our doctrine is the creator, preserver, and governor of all things. And that gets a little bit at that, you know, massive nature of him, right? Mm-hmm. But then that we're included in that all things, right? That he is preserving us, and that he does want to govern us, and that some of those rules that we talked about earlier, they do come into play in terms of living a life that honors him. But the beginning is he's their creator. He made it all. So that's one of my favorite definitions.
And now that we got the easy question out of the way,
we have solved theology. Yeah. This is the last episode of the Creator Podcast.
Oh no, it's about to get good because we're getting to the juicy stuff. Reformed, Orthodox, and a conservative rabbi walk into an octagon. Bare knuckle, who wins? I'm just asking the questions that people want to know.
That is definitely the question. I can't answer that one, but I can tell you that if you have a Reform wedding, a conservative wedding, and an Orthodox wedding, what the difference is in an Orthodox wedding, the mother of the rabbi is pregnant. In the conservative wedding, the rabbi is pregnant. And in the Reform wedding, both brides are pregnant. So it's all at stake.
I don't know if you heard about the Catholic priest and the Protestant minister and the rabbit who walked into a bar, but the rabbit turns to the other two and goes, "Guys, I think I'm a typo."
And on that note,
it is definitely time to take the pulse. Steve, I think I sent you these questions in advance.
Did you?
It's just
I have no idea.
Five things. Not a tough test. This is not a trivia contest. It is the pulse, and so it's, what are you watching? What are you listening to? What are you reading? What is God saying to you? And then what are you creating? But we'll take those individually, and Darrell and I will answer as well. And you can, you know, hem and haw and take as much time as you need, because there's an edit. So you don't have to worry about that. So I'll start with you, Darrell. What are you watching?
Right now, I am watching the NBA playoffs. And because I don't have a dog in this fight, I've been able to enjoy it. And I've been watching some of these young stars just develop right in front of us. And I think there's some back and forth happening. It seems that there's no close games anymore. It's either a blowout or you know, the team's out of it early.
Well, it also seems like there's no dominant team in these playoffs either. That, you know, you know, last
that's because the Knicks aren't playing.
Ooh, I don't think the Knicks have been playing for many a year, my friend. Many a year.
Yeah, this guy.
Hey, I root for the Mets. I know I'm an expert on lovable losers.
There you go.
Praise God, the Celtics are currently winning 50-23 against the Heat at the time that we are recording.
See what I mean?
So that series is wild, back and forth. And I don't think Marcus Smart's playing tonight either.
No.
I didn't they change their name to the Celtics? Because they're
I think Miami should change their name to the Hot and Cold instead of just the Heat.
Oh.
What are you watching, Steven?
I'm watching Star Trek. This new Strange New Worlds, which is it's beautiful. I love the idea of space and aliens and because that's going to happen one of these. It may not happen to you and me. It may happen to our great descendants. And how are we going to be religious people? You know, when some alien comes, either an alien who claims to have done all the stuff in the Bible, or what if an alien comes to say, you know, I got my book of, you know, God came and gave me my little green man Bible and how we incorporate that. And
I think Joseph Smith already did that one.
Perhaps
too soon.
I didn't understand the whole golden 747s. That's where he lost me. That's the Scientologists.
There is actually a show out now called Under the Banner of Heaven that is Ooh. Sort of set in the LDS community. It's a crime drama, but set within the LDS community and actually oddly sort of harkens back to Joseph Smith. It's quite interesting the way they've set this thing up.
I'll have to check it out.
So the antagonist is a time traveling Elon Musk.
No, actually, it's a former Spider-Man. It's Andrew Garfield. He's the main cop in this show. But that is not my answer for what I'm watching. I have finally caught all the way up on Atlanta. Somehow, when the second season of Atlanta dropped, I couldn't figure out where to stream it. And so I have, I was trying to get ready for season three. I couldn't quite make it in time, but I caught up by the finale. I think I actually watched that like in real time with the rest of the world. Mm. And it's just such a unique show. It's almost like a collection of vignettes at this point, including the same characters, but it's not episodic kind of week to week. But Donald Glover is an absolute genius and I've really enjoyed seasons 2 and 3 of Atlanta in a sort of, pretty quick binge here.
Excellent.
What are you listening to?
I got back into Coltrane. Every 5-10 years, I realize I haven't listened to him enough. And, to me, my favorite things is the best 20 minutes of music ever created. I could just listen to that for days.
Wait a second. My favorite things, like as part of our repertoire.
Not
that one.
No. I mean, it is that song, but he's John Coltrane.
Yeah.
Does this amazing, amazing improvisation based on my favorite things.
So better than Trevor Hochman's arrangement. That doesn't seem possible.
Maybe, maybe not, but listen to that, my friend.
Okay. I will have to check it out.
Blows my mind every time.
What are you listening to, Darrell?
Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers. I was checking out Kendrick Lamar's new album. And so I've been enjoying that and just listening to his growth and maturity and how he has dealt with things that I can relate to, like writer's block and trying to be creative on a platform that expects you to be excellent every time. So I've been enjoying listening to that. And Pusher Terrence, as I call him, also had an album come out recently. And there was one track in particular I was waiting for. It's called Pray For You with his brother. When I was growing up living in a shelter, a group called The Clips came out and they were the new hot thing. And when his brother went and found religion, he stepped away and he recently came back with this brand new perspective on why his old life helped form who he is now. And it was great to listen to.
Wow. Well, in preparation for our 27th college reunion, I have been listening to a Yale 95 playlist that I played a role in curating. The class of 94 had put together a Spotify playlist, somebody in the class, and I sort of chopped it up because they had like the dance music in with the Tori Amos and the Indigo Girls. Oh. And it was like, this doesn't really work. So I have one list that's like, sort of if you were just walking through a dorm on a random night, what you might hear through, you know, out of the doors of several rooms. And then there's another one that's actually all the dance music. So our reunion was canceled due to COVID, but they are allowing us, well, I say allowing us, like, they make money off these 25th reunions, and so they're allowing us to come back for a 25th reunion 2 years later. Important question, Stephen. Are you coming to New Haven?
I didn't even know that we had this scheduled. When is this?
It is June 3rd to the 5th.
June 3rd to the 5th. I'll have to take a look.
And the registration deadline is obviously coming up very quickly here. So
I can imagine.
It would be great to see you if you can break away from some of that.
That's
time.
A problem because that's the Pentecost.
Yes.
That is Shavuot. So,
right. That's not going to work.
That is not going to work. I will be leading services that weekend.
Well, we'll have to connect otherwise. What are you reading?
Well, I am reading a series called by Eric Flint, 1632, which is a huge series based upon alternate history where in the year 2000, a small West Virginia town, maybe 50,000 people, gets removed and plunked down in 1632 Germany. So with all the infrastructure of the town and all the people, and how history changes, because you know they interact with people and they you know they bring their technology, but you can't necessarily recreate modern technology. So you have to sort of create the tools to create the tools. So they're making sort of like 1800 technology in the 1600s, and while it starts off just in like one book in Germany, by now they're like all over the world. And so there are books where they're in China and India and North America, and it's wild stuff.
Wow. Did you ever watch a show called Dark on Netflix?
I don't think I did.
German time travel show. You would definitely enjoy that.
Yeah. I'm there.
Really, really good. I'm there. The idea of the world sort of being reformed by a group of West Virginians is a little frightening to me. But,
What's Wolverine! Really funny... Yes. It's, you know, for West Virginians, they're fairly conservative, but like fairly conservative Americans in 1632 Europe, they're like crazy liberals.
Yes.
So it's all a matter of perspective.
And their leader is named Joe Manchin. Is that right? Okay. We're not discussing the Southern Baptist Convention and we're not discussing politics.
Probably wise.
I have been reading a book called Travels with George by Nathaniel Philbrick. I read his Bunker Hill book last year, and the notion here is that he and his wife kind of got in the car and tried to travel George Washington's route. When he became president, he wanted to get out to all of the states to sort of understand what life was like, you know, in all these different places. And but that's sort of an interesting quandary because the notion of that book is terrific, right? It sounds very fascinating. But I find that I'm getting a lot of like Nathaniel Philbrick's experiences on the road intertwined with George Washington's history. And so I thought I'd pose the question, do you ever quit on a book? And if so, like when? Do you get to a point where you're like, I'm 30% in, I'm just going to slug it out and get through this thing? Because that's kind of the point I'm at with this book right now. I don't know whether I want to carry on or quit.
Unless someone tells me to stick with the book. And there are sometimes they'll be like, no, you really, you got to get through like halfway and it really turns on. It's a sunken cost fallacy, my friend.
Right.
There's only so much time in the day.
And there are too many good books.
Exactly. Exactly.
Darrell, you ever quit on a book?
Absolutely.
That answer fairly does not regularly. Surprise me at all. What are you reading?
Right now, two things. In fact, one for a hobby and two just for some betterment. I've been going through the Book of Matthew and really trying to, and this comes down to my answer around what has God been saying to you as well, and the importance of audience and the different language and styles of writing in the four Gospels, and starting with the Book of Matthew and how the book is just filled with expectation, even in the language. And I just had an opportunity to speak at Asbury University, and we talked about the talents. And it was just impactful for me to, as I processed and developed my message, to just continue to dive deeper into that text and just pull out some of the day-to-day significance and not just focus on the bigger picture messages and the motifs throughout the book. And for my hobby, I've been reading up on some leather working. I got a huge stash of like brand new leather and hide given to me. I mean, like literally thousands of dollars worth of the stuff. And so I've just been reading on how to work with it. Got an excuse to get some new tools.
This kind of stuff happens to Darrell all the time, Steven.
All the time.
People dump like, you know, massive piles of beautiful, you know, cedar or mahogany. They're like, I bet you could do something with this. Yeah.
Fairly regularly. And so I'm working on one of the projects I'm working on right now is actually a new case for this guitar that's right behind me, and incorporating the leather into the case. So just toying around with some of that.
That's very cool. Yeah. And you sort of already got into what is God saying to you. So, Stephen, what is God saying to you?
There's a saying in Yiddish, which is "Man tracht und Gott lacht," which is "Man plans and God laughs."
Right.
So, over the winter, I knew what the next 2 years were going to be. I knew everything, and I was going to do my classes, and I was going to keep working, blah blah blah. And one Saturday morning in February, I'm walking to synagogue. Walk like it's a walk in a prayer. That's what I'm trying to do. And I get hit by a car. And I was convinced my life was over. I heard the crunch. I was flying through the air. I was 100% sure I was going to hit, my head was going to hit something. That was going to be end. Curtain falls. That's all. And I didn't die. I busted a few ribs. I tore the supraspinatus in my shoulder, which I don't know, but it allows you to, it controls lifting your arm up. So
so your dreams of pitching for the Mets are over.
My dreams of
very much still alive.
I still true. It's true. They're talking about getting Bertolo Colon back. It's like 49 or something. But I can't join the white supremacist groups. You know, I can't do that little Hitler problem. But
that's helpful.
Yeah. But it has. I now have to fit in 10 hours of physical therapy a week, you know, to try and get some skill back.
Yeah.
And I have to try and fit that in with my classes, with my job, with taking care of the stuff around the house. And for me, God is saying, you know, don't go so fast. You know, don't plan your entire life out in 1 week. And don't be so sure you know exactly what's going to happen and where you're supposed to go. Because maybe there's going to be a detour, and maybe you need to look somewhere else, and maybe you need to take a step in a different direction for a little bit, and maybe you'll come back, maybe you won't, and it's not going to be the same path. You know, what is it from Pocahontas? You can't step foot in the same river twice. I'm more open, a little more humble than I was just 6 months ago.
Well, the last 2 years have sort of taught us all that as well, right? That we can have all these plans and And then they might lead in a different direction.
So true.
Well,
so
as I referenced earlier, I had the privilege of preaching at yesterday's service. And so we also use a calendar in the Christian tradition. It's known as the lectionary. And the passage of Lydia in the town of Philippi came up as the passage for this week. And I found it very interesting. That chapter in Acts has the story of Paul encountering Timothy, who becomes, you know, his protege and somebody who's very central to his ministry. There's a certain number of verses, probably about 9 or 10 verses dedicated to that. And then the end of the book is, or the end of that chapter, about 15 verses is dedicated to Paul and Silas being thrown into jail. And there's an earthquake, and the jailer is about to end his life because he thinks all the prisoners have escaped. And Paul and Silas tell him, no, we're all still here. And the jailer and his whole family come to faith. That gets about half, you know, the back half of the chapter. And then there are 3 verses in the middle about this woman, Lydia, and her conversion. She was a dealer in purple cloth, which meant that she was a wealthy entrepreneur because purple cloth was very hard to get. Her clients were royalty. And when she converted to Christianity, she was the first Jewish convert to Christianity in Europe. And she was a woman. And she gets 3 verses because she was a woman. But then her impact on the community, because she had that wealth, she hosted Paul and Silas and their whole mission team. And then her home became the de facto temple. There were fewer than 10 Jewish men. The women were meeting by the river. They didn't have a temple. And so her home became the place where that church got planted. And our congregation is actually quite small post-COVID. And we've been talking a lot about outreach in the community. And I was struck by the fact that there's a Lydia out there in our community who's just waiting for us to come and meet her. And there are other people in that scenario where they are waiting for us to come and find them and deliver the word to them. And so that was kind of the 3-minute version of my sermon yesterday.
That is beautiful.
Well, and it's always beautiful when you're preparing teaching that you feel like, I don't even have to preach this. This has just enriched my life so much that I have no need to actually preach this. It's almost an extra treat that you get to share it with your fellow believers, you know, in some situations. So that was the case yesterday for me. It was very lovely. And
preaching.
Go ahead.
No, preaching has to be for you. It has to be for you first. You can't preach for the congregation. Right. That's empty. Yeah. It has to touch your heart first, or it's not going to touch anyone else's.
For sure. And our last question in the pulse is, what are you creating right now?
Creating a backlog of things I have to do. That's a lot. Unlike you guys, I am not good with my hands. Like, I've lost some weight this year. So my big project was I drilled holes in my belt. That is about what I can do with tools. I cannot put things together. So like things I'm not really good at creating, but I am working on creating more relationships. I'm putting together an event for all of my congregants who have celebrated their B'nai Mitzvah over the COVID pandemic. And we're gonna, you know, some of them were completely virtual, some of them were partially virtual, and we're all gonna meet together in person. And it, like, hopefully it's gonna be powerful. Hopefully they're not gonna be like, oh, I'm 15, I'm so over it. So yeah, that does happen. But we're gonna rebuild and we're gonna re-celebrate again. So,
well, and the few opportunities I've had, because usually it's our kids are getting invited to those ceremonies and the parties and stuff like that. But occasionally with some of the families we've been close to, we've been invited as well. And it is, we actually ran into some friends from a church in town where I occasionally preach. And so obviously they're Christians. And they said, man, we don't have this in the same way, you know. We were all commenting on what a lovely, you know, time it is to celebrate that period in a child's life and that transition and in their growth, in their religious experience and that kind of thing. You guys are really getting that right, and at least in our faith, we don't have something that's set. Actually, an upcoming guest of ours made his own rite of passage ceremonies for his kids. But it's not sort of baked in to our religious experience the same way.
There's a big cautionary tale here, though, because a lot of people overly focus on that bar mitzvah or that confirmation yep. or whatever. And if you do that, if you make all of religion based upon teaching the kids, and you know, teaching the kids hugely important,
sure.
but if you make that the central focus of your religion, what happens when the kids go to college?
Right.
You know, what happens when the kids do their bar mitzvah at 13 and they don't feel like, you know, that's the big mountain, right?
Right, right.
And so you have to make sure that you're always giving new opportunities for people to find meaning, no matter what age and what stage of right. life they are.
Absolutely.
And so,
like your 82-year-old rabbi classmate.
You got it. You got it.
What are you creating, Darrell?
Right now, I am creating a solution to a mistake. I accidentally crushed one of my daughter's nightlights. So I am custom building her one in the wood shop. And when I'm finished on this podcast, I'm going to go do the wiring. The wires and the button came in the mail today. So I'll wire that up and get it soldered so she can have it.
Oh, yeah. Along with all your leather work.
Right. And then, gotta get nightlight, then the leather.
Yeah, and Stephen, you lumped me in as being good with my hands. That's all Darrell. I am not that kind of creator at all. My creative conundrum right now is that my wife is not eating. She is getting ready for camp, and she keeps getting to about 2:30 in the afternoon and realizing she hasn't eaten anything. And so I have to get creative to make sure that she actually gets some food in her body before the middle of the afternoon, because that is not a healthy thing when you're in your highest stress time of the year. She's trying to find her last couple of lifeguards and male counselors and hold on to everybody else that and Darrell's going through the same thing, trying to staff up Camp Swanecki out there in Ohio. Yeah. So I got to get creative about getting Jen to eat something that resembles three meals a day.
Can make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Do you have an Instant Pot?
We do.
Soup.
Yeah.
Just make a pot of soup. Just leave it on.
That's a good point.
She can grab it anytime. It's just like right there. It leaves like 24 hours.
And she actually eats soup, which I really don't do. So, not eat soup. That is a good suggestion.
Wait a sec. We can make a whole episode. Why are you not eating soup?
I've just never been a soup guy. I like my food crunchy.
Who is not a soup guy?
I'm not.
How many years have I known you and you're not, how do I not know this about you?
It's like I always say, you think you know somebody.
Apparently. I would not have come on to this podcast.
We'll have to have the soup controversy on a future episode. We have taken up more time than we said we would tonight, and you are a very busy guy. So really appreciate you you coming on, Stephen. This has been a rich discussion. And you helped us cross the Hebrew boundary line. Appreciate that. Did you want to end it off with your favorite song from when we were in college? You'd always try to get everybody to sing along to that rousing chorus of Throw the
A few moments later.
I've stumbled into a multiverse of madness.
Condom in my pocket. Designated driver. I think that is probably going to end up on the cutting room floor.
Drew, you got a lot of stuff for Redbubble.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much. Season 3, episode 16. Soon to be Rabbi Stephen Wolvik and currently Hassan Stephen Wolvik. Hassan. Not enough to see. Hassan.
You'd be able to say it if you ate soup.